Hey guys, Dylan here, producer of the E-Commerce Alley podcast. Now, before we get into this episode, I wanted to let you know about a special offer that we are giving all of our podcast listeners. If you scroll down below this episode in the show notes, you'll find a link to a special podcast listener deal on our scientific e-commerce Facebook ads testing course. Now, normally this is $27, but we're going to give you a special link to grab it for only $10. And included with that is a 30-minute ads expert call where we help answer your questions and implement the content. Thank you very much for being a valued listener to our podcast. And now, onto this episode.
This episode is a little bit special to me, and that is because I had the privilege to interview the founder of a company that I have been a big raving fan of and a customer of since I was in seventh grade. Now, this company is the largest online retailer of audio and instruments, and the company's name is Sweetwater. And so I had the opportunity to interview Chuck Surak, who founded Sweetwater in 1979. And now Sweetwater, if you're unfamiliar, it is a $2 billion a year company with over 2,800 employees led by Chuck and his amazing team. And something really interesting and cool about Sweetwater is that with every single package that they deliver, they actually ship out candy with it. And it says, our sweet way of saying thank you. And so in this episode, Chuck walks through the philosophy behind that, why they ship that out, which, by the way, they ship out 4.2 million pieces of candy a year to their more than 9 million customers in their database. And something really unique about this that I'm going to really recommend you kind of lean in and pay attention to is the emphasis that Sweetwater places on customer experience. They have over 650 sales engineers that are assigned to every single customer, and they will call customers and have relationships with them for many, many years with high touch point. And so if you're not doing a high touch experience, or you want to get inspiration of how they treat their customers to build massive lifetime values and really build an organization that people like me are raving about and buying from for decades, then lean in and listen up, because this is a great episode. I used to get this magazine, this instrument music and gear audio magazine, to our doorstep every single month. It took like 6 hours to read through, and I would just look at all this equipment, and I've bought in so much gear. In fact, I placed a massive order for our church just last week at this company, and by divine intervention, I have this amazing ability to have Chuck Surak from Sweetwater on this interview. And so, Chuck, man, thank you so much for your generosity and being here with me.
Oh, you're very welcome, Josh. And I'm happy to be here today. And I'll be happy to impart whatever information I can to help others.
I love it. Well, hey, if anyone isn't familiar, what I'd love to do, if anyone's not familiar with Sweetwater, you may not be in the whole musical instrument or audio world, but Sweetwater is a billion-dollar company based in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and they have a fantastic facility there, massive facility while you're at it, and largest retailer online of audio gear as well as musical instrument gear. Am I right in that, Chuck?
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing and humble American story. Started very humbly back in 1979 with a beat up rusty VW bus. And today we're the largest in the world at what we do. We have 2,800 employees, 9 million customers, and it's just been a fun ride over the last 45 years.
Wow. Just amazing. And you were just so I know, before you started Sweetwater, you were a musician, right? Were you a keyboard player?
I'm a saxophone player, and I also play keyboard. So I was on the road for about 5 years.
Okay.
After high school, I went around the country and played. Back in those days, you could have bands playing six nights a week at the local hotels or restaurants, that sort of thing. And so I did that for many years, and finally got tired of being on the road. And I came home with my beat-up VW bus, and I'm going, what am I going to do now? And I had taught myself how to do recording on the road, and I was very technical in the band. Could play my saxophone with one hand and run the mixer with the other hand. And came home with a VW bus and a bunch of microphones and bought some recording equipment. And next thing you know, I'm pulling my bus alongside the school, the church, the nightclub, and I'd run 100 feet of microphone cables in, mic up the band, the choir, the preacher, whatever it was, company president. And then I would take them and I'd sit in my bus with my headphones on and the reel-to-reel tape recorder back in those days. And I would take them to my modest 12 by 55 mobile home. where I would edit the songs in the right order, maybe put some compression or reverb, you know, technical stuff. And then we'd send away and get albums made or 45s or cassettes or CDs eventually. And then not very long after, a couple of years, I moved into a house on the west side of Fort Wayne, Indiana, where I am. And we had a small 1,000-square-foot house, but I built a big studio off the end of it. So for the first time in my company's history, people could come see me as well as I could still go see them in the bus. And, you know, I was way back in the early 80s, and the company really took off from there.
Wow, wow. So, and so right now, you guys are in a massive facility with even like a front, like retail, in like where you can go in and you could try things, and you have a studio in there. You're like... So when I grew up, I played a lot of, I still play a lot of, I lead worship in my church. And so I'm very plugged into the whole music scene and equipment. I'm like an audio tech nerd. And so I remember growing up and I got two magazines. One was Musician's Friend and the other was Sweetwater. Yep. And you're living like the dream that I, like you built all the stuff that I like dreamed as a kid. I'm like, oh, it'd be cool to have all this music and all the audio gear and the interfaces and then have like an analog studio and then all, and have access to all of this. And you were, you did all that. Like you toured and you had a bus. I'm curious. So like, what did recording engineering look like out of a van. You said a van.
VW bus.
Oh, okay.
Vans, buses, transporters. They had lots of different names, but the one I had was called a VW bus. You know, it's sitting in the bus with headphones. And in those days, I started with a 4-track reel-to-reel recorder, and then eventually I upgraded to an 8-track reel-to-recorder that I had on sort of a modular kind of rack that I could put it in the bus. The bus, I'd taken all the seats out of the bus, so I could put the mixer and the 8-track recorder in the bus, and then I would take them out of there and, frankly, lift them into the front door of my living room of my mobile home. And that's how it started.
Amazing. And that, so I was in this era of like the transitional phase to like a lot of analog and then heavy into digital. So now everything is like very digital, particularly from a recording engineering standpoint. So it's amazing. You know, I hear the stories of the 4-tracks and they, and all of that, but that wasn't really my world. I was like right at the tail end of that.
It was a good training ground for me, and I feel fortunate that I also got to transition through those phases. But learning to record onto 4-tracks or onto 8-tracks meant you had to be very creative in how you put the solos on and what order you recorded things, and you couldn't put every instrument on a different channel or a different track like we can do today with computers. You can have hundreds of tracks, and what's amazing to me is the money you would spend to do an analog reel-to-reel recorder or a reel-to-reel studio back then. If you had a mixing console and, especially if you jumped up into 24-track, you could spend hundreds of thousands, if not $1 million. So it really was out of the reach of most musicians. Well, today you can buy an iPad or a Mac and get GarageBand on it, or you can do similar things on PC, and they sound better. They have more tracks. It's amazing. And the tools are literally so inexpensive today compared to what I had to use back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah. Wow. So did you guys begin with like a magazine right out of the, so you launched 1979. How did you start moving product?
Yeah. So I really was just a recording studio for the first several years.
Okay.
And the story gets fun. In 1984, a friend of mine owned a music store here in Fort Wayne, and he said, "Would you like to go to the NAMM show?" And I'm so naive. I'm going, "What is the NAMM show?" And he explains at that time it was the National Association of Music Merchants, and it was going to be up in Chicago. And I said, "What do they do there?" "Oh, well, that's where all the music dealers go and they show new products." I said, "Sure, I'll go along with you." And again, I had no thought that I'd ever be a music store or anything like that. But I went, and I happened to see a prototype of the Kurzweil K250. And it was made by Ray Kurzweil and a bunch of engineers from MIT out in Boston. And what was unique about it was the first synthesizer that would play back digital recordings of other instruments. Now, today that's easy. We do that on our iPads, and soon we'll do it on our ballpoint pens, I think. But but you could sample other instruments. And it came with 40 sounds built into it, a 9-foot grand piano, a string section, upright bass, all that. And you could add other sounds via sound blocks. You would open the drawer up and put more sounds in. And anyway, I thought, man, that's pretty cool. It was wicked expensive. It was $20,000 for the basic machine.
Oh, my goodness.
And there was another $20,000 of upgrades and options. But I thought if I could use that in my own studio, because now I'm in this new location on the west side of Fort Wayne, I could offer to my customers, would you like to hear your music with a 9-foot grand piano or a 45-piece string section or a 50-voice choir and all that? And it was a way for me to add a little extra to the sessions. It allowed the musicians to have better sounding products. It was a win-win for everybody other than the initial cost of the instrument. Well, I rationalized that because I had a small, very small 5.5-foot baby grand piano. It was always, from a recording studio point of view, it's always in a state of out of tune. So you're always tuning it. And I thought, well, this has a 9-foot sampled piano and a whole bunch of other instruments. So I sold my baby grand piano and bought first Kurzweil K250. And I bought a very early serial number. And I started reverse engineering how it worked. Being an engineer for several years, I knew how to record my own sound. So I started sampling my own sounds into it. It had a 68,000 Motorola chip, the same chip that was in the Apple 128, 512, and Mac Pluses in the early days. And so you could load and save new sounds to the Macintosh computer. It didn't have a drive on it or anything. But I started making a lot of my own sounds and started reaching out to other K250 owners. And so I was not afraid. It was almost a brotherhood. So I reached out to Stevie Wonder and Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton and Bob James and all these old artists. And I'd go, wow, you have a K250. I have one too. It was like a brotherhood. You have sounds? I'd be happy to trade sounds. And I universally heard, no, I don't have any sounds. I'm just a musician, but I sure would love to have your sounds. Mm. So I start helping my friends with sounds. And you have to think back to the 512 Macintosh days. We didn't even have hard drives yet. So you literally put your first disc in and to copy it, it would grind away, and then you'd pop that disc out, put your system disc back in. It took 52 swaps of these little 3.5-inch discs just to copy a sound.
And wow.
It's kind of funny. I would almost get irritated. I'm trying to run my recording session, but off to the side, I'm copying discs for my friends. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Eventually, I became a parts dealer. I became friends with the Kurzweil representative, and I started selling parts for the Kurzweils to my friends. Again, I mentioned it was a works in a drawer where you could put other sound blocks in, so I was upgrading a lot of my friends' machines. And I'll never forget, I got a call from a guy at Loyola University, and he says, hey, I'd like to buy another K250. And I go, what? He says, oh, yeah. And I said, but Steve, I just upgraded your machine with all the latest, greatest. Why in the world do you want another K250? And he says, oh, but the K250 only has 12 notes of polyphony. It only plays 12 notes at a time. And I'm looking at my fingers and going, I got 10 fingers. You know, what's the point? And he said, no, you don't understand. I record orchestras. And for me to rent an orchestra for a day is a lot of money. And if I had a couple K250s, I could better simulate the orchestra. I said, okay, Steve, you're a little weird, but I got it. So, and it takes a few days later, and somebody else called me with a similar thing. So I called the Kurzweil rep and said, hey, I've got some Kurzweils sold. And so I figured if I bought the first two, the third one would be mine to keep. And so I became a Kurzweil parts dealer and a new instrument dealer. Did that for a couple of years. And then one day I got a call from one of my friends, and he said, I understand you can do sheet music on the computer. I said, yeah, I know how to do that. I'm already doing that in my studio. I had reverse engineered the Kurzweil K250, taught myself computer programming as well as the sound design. But I also taught myself how to do computer software, to do accounting in the studio, to do cassette labels and all that. And so I was early on with MIDI and the whole technology, but I had a program called Professional Composer long before Digital Performer or even Performer came out. It was kind of the precursor of those two. And so I became a dealer for Professional Composer and then Total Music and Freehand, a bunch of different products. And next thing you know, my business changes from being just a recording studio helping my friends to now I'm helping my friends with their music equipment.
Hmm.
1990, I'm still doing this out of my house. I had moved to a second house by then, but I was still operating out of my house. And we started looking for a commercial place. So I found a location just a couple hundred feet down the road from where I was. And we built a brand new 5,000 square foot building. And I built a new house at the top of the hill. I didn't know how. For the first time in my life, I was going to be separate from my work. I had to go outside and walk about 100 yards down to the business. And it just grew and grew from there. We moved in 1991 with 5 employees. The next year, we had 20. And we were there for the next 17 years.
Wow.
And we moved out in 2006. We had 225 employees and moved to the location we are today. And today, you know, we've got 650 sales engineers that all are based on that same philosophy of taking care of our friends, doing the right thing, you know, on and on and on. And today we have about 1 million square feet under roof and 160 acres of property. It's an unbelievable dream.
Man. Yeah. Wow.
What is a short version of it?
It's amazing. And you can tell that you know the story, like you've lived it, and it sounds like you've relived it enough because it's inspiring. Like, it's I think every entrepreneur's dream. You know, I've been an entrepreneur for 10 years, and to do something impactful and that you just love and build a culture that you just love is so amazing. I'm curious, like, when did you transition from magazine as a priority? Like, was there a shift from like the magazine? Because I remember the Sweetwater magazines were this thick, and I got it, and I don't know how I got it, but I got it. And then you transitioned to online. Like, was there what year was that, would you say? And how did that impact the business?
Sure. So we were online in 1994, which is like dog years ago. Wow. We think it was the very first music industry website, you know, on the internet. In the early days, we didn't sell. It was all about educational, because that was what I really pushed hard. And we continue to do catalogs to this day. Now, we don't do as many, and they're not quite as thick because paper is expensive, and a lot of people want to be more green. But we have published a 500 to 600 page catalog for a long, long time. We were doing millions and millions of those a year. And we looked at them as like the Sears wish book. And it was amazing. I could go into almost any studio in the country, and there'd be the Sweetwater Pro Gear catalog on the mixing console or the coffee table or whatever. Universities would regularly use them for their students and say, design your dream studio from Sweetwater and use the Sweetwater book to do it. And then, you know, after we were on the internet for a few years doing educational, we started doing more and more online selling and all of that. And we've done that for several decades now.
Yeah. Wow. No, that's incredible. And I want to say, so one thing, and I'd be curious to understand the ideas behind this, but like one thing that you guys do really, really well, I believe, is like this high touch model and some unique things. So for example, if anyone's not watching, by the way, I have this little bag of candy here that says our sweet way of saying thank you. And first of all, how many pounds or like pieces of candy do you send out a year, ballpark?
You know what? You're going to love this. On average, we send out about 4.2 million of those packages. I didn't do the math. I think it's about 350,000 pounds every year.
That's a lot of candy.
That's a lot of candy. And, oh, there are so many amazing stories of people will tell me that it allows them to order music gear and give their spouse the candy, whether it's a man or a woman. I've heard of stories of little kids loving that their dad or mom buys from Sweetwater because they get the candy. I've heard of people that have gone into diabetic comas and they're in very remote areas and they remember they had a package from Sweetwater that had candy. And then I also hear from people that go, how dare us send, you know, candy and people are fat and diabetic and all that. But I got to tell you, 99% of the people think it's fun. They understand the whole point of what we're trying to do. Just, it really is a sweet way, a little different way of saying thank you.
So just one day you're like, let's just start sending candy with everything.
Long time ago. Yep.
Really? So you've done that a long time ago.
Almost since the beginning. There's a term from the South called lanyap. They talk about this in New Orleans, and it means providing a little extra. And so that's really been our motivation in everything we do, is providing a little extra. You know, in the early days, of course, it was education sort of things. Long before we sold online, we just educated customers how to use it. We've always had technical support. So you buy anything from us. And frankly, even if you don't buy it from us, as long as you're a reasonable customer, we're going to take good care of you. And, you know, maybe you're not so loyal to us, but after you get some tech support, you'll become more loyal. When we sell keyboards for years and years and years, we included additional sounds for free to get a little bit more out of it. And we sell speakers, and we'd have guides on how to set the speakers up correctly and, you know, with the right distances and all that. And it just goes on and on and on. Our company's really about that lanyap or giving a little bit extra.
Wow.
Every guitar we sell, and we sell hundreds of thousands, I couldn't believe it, but hundreds of thousands of guitars. I don't know where they go, but every guitar more than $399, we do a complete 55-point checkup. We open it. We look for every cosmetic thing, every mechanical, every electronic thing. You know, and I wouldn't do that if all the guitars were really great, but I got to tell you, they're handmade. And on Monday or Friday, Mary or Bill has a bad day, or they don't see the little blemish, you know. And so I don't want to sell those to customers if I wouldn't use them myself. And so that's always been our philosophy.
Hey, thanks for checking out the E-Commerce Alley podcast. If you've been enjoying this episode so far, it would mean a ton to us if you'd leave us a rating on whatever podcast app you're listening to. And as a token of our appreciation, if you take a screenshot of your review and email it to team@theecommercealley.com, we're just going to go ahead and shoot you a $10 Amazon gift card just as a thank you. Now, back to the episode.
In December, I just got a brand new Gretsch, semi hollow body electric and 55 point inspection as expected. And, flawless, incredible. Like, you guys definitely do take this whole next level of that touch. And one thing in particular really stands out. And this is, there are like TikToks about this and so many videos about this. And that is your 650, I think you said, sales engineers, right? Where I have a guy named Brian. I have had Brian as my guy for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And Brian will call every order I place. Like, I remember I've placed orders that were like $18 for these little lug nuts or a cable that's like $22. And I get a call from Brian. I get an email from Brian making sure, letting me know, got the order. We're shipping it out. Hey, it shipped. Hey, it's arrived. Do you need anything else? The same way when we've placed like $25,000 orders for like lots of, a lot more gear. And so can you talk about that? Like, what inspired you to do, because that's not normal. Like, that's not a normal experience. And we work with hundreds of different different brands. And I don't know if I can count on one hand how many actually do that.
Yeah. There's a lot of backstory to that, but the bottom line is it's just the right thing to do, you know, and it's a little bit awkward sometimes today when everybody wants no touch and you ordered online and, you know, but I really believe I want to make sure the experience is great with our customers. I'm looking for long-term repeat business. And we're fortunately in a business that's not just one and done. They're always back buying more. And that's just part of developing a relationship. But if I go back even further, I've got a lot of philosophies, you know, that I believe in. You mentioned, you know, always do the right thing. And I believe anything's possible. Failure is not an option. I quote those all the time. But when I was a little boy, I went through Boy Scouts. And a Boy Scout, you know, maybe it's not as popular today as it was when I was a kid, but a Boy Scout learns to be trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, clean, brave, and reverent. The Scout Law. Those are great principles to run by personally, but they're also even better to run by professionally. I just want to do the right thing. Mm. That allows me to lay my head on my pillow at night, allows my employees to just know that we've always done the right thing. Another thought about the customer service, I don't believe a lot of business you go to and there's some awkward situation and quickly you hear from whoever the front desk person or whoever that they need to talk to a manager. We don't do that at Sweetwater. You will never hear, oh, I need to talk to my manager for approval. I have taught everyone that works at Sweetwater to always do whatever it takes to take care of the customer. And even if you think the customer is taking advantage of us, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. And if the receptionist wants to replace the keyboard or the janitor runs into someone who feels we owe them a new guitar, sell them a new guitar, give them a new keyboard. And I'm not worried about the finance part because honestly, we'll take it back in. We'll figure out what's wrong with it. We'll fix it. We'll sell it as a B stock or something. But let's just do the right thing for the customer. And I never, ever want to get in the way of saying, oh, I got to talk to a manager first. They are empowered to do whatever. And everyone in front of them has been empowered to do whatever it takes to do the right thing for the customer. And I'm not saying you won't get talked to, but you'll never get in trouble. You'll never get chastised. We may say, hey, next time you might consider doing this. But I would much rather they err towards doing too much for the customer and let me do a little more training and then go the other way and frustrate a customer even further, even longer. And so the way you'll get in trouble at Sweetwater is not doing enough fast enough for the customer. And that's the truth.
Wow.
Yeah.
I could, with that level of autonomy, it makes sense why my guy Brian has been my guy for like however many, I mean, probably closing in on a decade since I've been leader of our church for 8 years. So, really speaks to that. Now there is something that I think is really neat about you, Chuck. And that's that everyone that I know that lives in Fort Wayne knows Chuck Surak and speaks highly of you. We had clients in town. We're in Ohio, so we're like, we're just north of Columbus. So we're probably 4 hours from you guys. And we had clients in town last week. And I said, yeah, I had the privilege. I get to interview Chuck next week. I'm so excited. He's like a, you know, entrepreneur hero of mine. And they're like, oh yeah, Chuck, he does this and this for Fort Wayne. Nothing but amazing things to say about you because it sounds like you're doing big stuff there. So philanthropy is definitely, I'm gathering, a huge part of who you are. And have you done that all along the way? And what does that kind of look like today?
well, getting back to being a Boy Scout, always helping others. But through all the years of Sweetwater, once we kind of got a little stable on our feet, and even before we did, there were organizations that myself and my leadership team would volunteer to help and do things with. You know, through the last many years at Sweetwater, we've donated literally millions of dollars every year to over 600 nonprofit organizations. Today, I have a foundation where we do even more and more of that. We have some really strong pillars with mental health and children and of course, the arts and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there, some of us are just really, really blessed. And the more my wife and I are given, which just is amazing to me, the more we are able to help others. And, oh, my gosh, I am so sorry. My phone rang. And, you know, we can help others. And, you know, some of these little guys and gals, they didn't get to choose what family they were born into or what hardships they have. In fact, all of us are only one hardship away of being in a different situation. And so we just have a real propensity and a heart for helping others and giving back and supporting those that are a little bit harder times. So
that's good. We're one hardship away. And I think that having the mindset of helping others and treating them the right way is so critical.
And I'd also say doing it with dignity. You know, I don't want to do it in a way that makes people feel uncomfortable. And, you know, we're doing a thing right now with one of the school systems. And we had the principal of the school, and we were asking, how can we help? And she says, oh, man, we said, what are the top three things about your students that we could help with? She says, oh, man, they're hungry. Oh, wow, that's awful. I can't imagine. We live in the greatest country in the world, and yet you still have kids going to school hungry. And she says, yeah, what's the second? Oh, they're hungry. Third, they're hungry. Well, we quickly went in and put a pantry in the school, and it's kind of in a hidden part of the school so the kids can come in with their backpacks and dignity, and they can get food and take it home for the evening or for the weekend. You know, today she would tell you that being hungry is not their first or second problem at that school. And there's just so many examples like that. It's unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah. Well, hey, Chuck, I just want to say thank you for coming on. Just talking to me about like the journey you've gone through, like you inspire me with everything that you've done. I think some of the big takeaways that I have is that you need to do the right thing and do things with dignity, be kind to others. I think we might need to grab the Boy Scout, words that you just said. And we need to like throw this in the show notes of this because those are so critical. And
you can Google it, but they're in the Boy Scout handbook.
And you have an actual handbook there.
Oh, yeah. It's one of my favorite books, actually. Everything from how to do first aid to how to do knots and use knives. But also they describe those 12 Boy Scout law words, a bunch of other stuff. So.
Wow. That's so good. Well, hey, Chuck, you were so gracious with your time for coming on here. I love that we had someone send an introduction, and I was like, there's no way Chuck's going to be willing to come on here and just talk a little bit about with Sweetwater and the sweet things that you're doing, and you were so gracious by saying yes. And so, my friend, I want to say thank you. And everybody listening, this is the E-Commerce Alley produced by Dylan Counts. We appreciate your time. Like Chuck said, you're one hardship away, but you can help people and you can do it with dignity. And if you do the right thing all the time in your business and you give your employees this and your team this autonomy to step in and lead, you can build an incredible organization like Chuck has done. And so thank you for listening and we'll see you in the next episode. Hey guys, it's Josh. Thanks for listening to the audio version of the E-Commerce Alley. Did you know that we actually have an amazing set in high-quality video production that gets posted on YouTube every single week? If you've never watched the E-Commerce Alley on YouTube, you have to. Go to alleypodcast.com/YouTube to check it out. Once again, thank you for listening to this podcast, and we hope you enjoy this episode.